Okay, so as mentioned, the topic today we're going to speak about Adon Olam. And again, as we mentioned just a moment ago, so Adon Olam, although it's familiar to many of us from the very end of the davening on Shabbos morning when in many shuls it's sung, or the end of the davening Friday night when it's sung, really in the Siddurim, right, it's not in the Siddur Siddur. In fact, even Art Scroll, which is usually very user-friendly, Art Scroll does not print Adon Olam at the end of Shachar Shabbos morning. Right, it doesn't even write. It's interesting. They have it for Friday night, or they reference the fact that some people sing it Friday night, but they do not reference it at all Shabbos morning, which is just very interesting. Adon Olam in the Siddurim is printed typically at the very beginning of Shacharis, and also at the end of Kriya Shema Lamita. And it seems, you know, its original composition was really to be recited at the very beginning of davening, you know, during the day. Who wrote Adon Olam? So we're not 100% sure. Some attribute it going back to the period of the Gaonim. The Gaonim were the rabbis in Iraq who followed the completion of the Talmud. So they lived somewhere between the period 500 of the Common Era, 900 of the Common Era, so we're talking a very, very early composition. Others attributed to Shlomo Ibn Gabiro. Shlomo Ibn Gabiro was one of the great Spanish poets of the early Middle Ages. Either way, it's a very, very early composition. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, this composition, what it speaks about, and why it's placed at the beginning of davening on a daily basis. If we had to sum up in one word what Adon Olam is all about, so the one word is God. Adon Olam is a poetic description of God. Adon Olam, he's the master of the universe, or some translate, he's the eternal master. Right? Adon Olam could be understood either as world or as eternal. Le'olam. Adon Olam Asher Molach B'Terem Kol Yetzir Nivra. God is the Lord, the Master, who reigned over the world before anything was creation. When everything was made through His will, Hazai Melech Shmo Nikra. So then He was able to be called the King. In other words, God was King even before anything actually existed, but God was only able to be called the King once you could only claim the title once there were people to actually give that title to the Ribono Shel Olam. Even after everything comes to an end, I think the poem means to say not that everything will necessarily come to an end, but if everything were to come to an end, if the universe were to vanish all of a sudden, a scary thought, nonetheless, the Ribbono Shel Olam would still continue to reign in all of His awesomeness. He was, He is, and He always will be in His glory. A description of the eternal nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why would we say this at the very beginning of our davening? So there's a story that's told about the Vilna Gaon. The story goes that an individual once came to the Vilna Gaon and said, I'll tell you why Adon Olam, in my opinion, was instituted to be said at the very beginning of Shacharis, the very beginning of the day. The Gemara says that Avraham Avinu was the first person to ever call Hashem Adon, to ever call Hashem Master. We know that Avraham Avinu instituted the tefillah of Shacharis, so what better way to start out Shacharis than with calling HaKadosh Baruch Hu Adon Olam, Master of the Universe, utilizing the very terminology which was used by Avraham Avinu. They say that the Vilna Gaon was so moved by this interpretation that he praised the fellow, this anonymous fellow who came up with this idea, he praised this anonymous fellow lavishly for having come up with this notion. What does that mean, that Avraham Avinu was the first one to call the Ribbono Shel Olam Adon, the first one to call God Master? I mean, certainly we know that... Well, that would be good, except that there were other people who had a relationship with God even before Avraham Avinu. Adam Arishon had a relationship with God. It was a little bit of a rocky relationship with God at a certain point, but you know, he had a relationship with God. Right? God even paid Adam Arishon the ultimate compliment. He came to Adam Arishon Gan Eden, and he saw him, and he said, "Ah, Hayeka." So, you know, the ultimate compliment that could be given to Adam Arishon was paid him by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Just threw that in for the Kalabas Yisurim people. But Adam Arishon had a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Noach had a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Shem and Aver had a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hanoch had a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yihalik Hanoch, they call Elohim. So, you know, what do you mean Avraham Avinu was the first one to call HaKadosh Baruch Hu Adam? So in a real hat tip to Kahal Adas Yishur, and I want to quote a beautiful approach that Rav Shimon Schwab, Zechut Tzadik Livracha, has in his sefer, Am Tefillah, and here he not only gives a beautiful approach himself, but he quotes Rav Hirsch Zatzal in giving a beautiful approach to Adon Olam. Says Rav Schwab, there's the nature of an Adam is different than that of a Melech. The nature of a master is different than that of a king. Both a master and a king rule over someone else. A master rules over his slaves, a king rules over his subjects, but the relationship between the king and the subject is oftentimes impersonal. Right? You ask the king, does he know the name of every single subject in his kingdom? I don't know, you know, maybe in Liechtenstein, you know, the ruler knows every single person in the country, both of them, right? But in most countries, you know, you ask the king, who are you ruling over? He knows a few people, this one, that one, but it doesn't know every single person in the country, right? He doesn't have a personal relationship with his subjects. And also, a master has a personal relationship with his servant, with his slave. Right? Again, it's not a relationship of equals, but he does know the person, and there is a personal bond between the master and the slave. Up until the time of Avraham Avinu, there were certainly individuals who had relationships with the Ribbono Shel Olam, but they didn't quite zero in on the concept that they were not unique, but indeed HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a personal relationship with every single human being. Again, there's certain relationships that are stronger than others, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a personal relationship with every single human being. Adam HaRishon thought, okay, you know, it's just me, it's just Chava, right, it was just him, right? But, you know, Noach thought, okay, I have a good relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the guy down the block, he's more of a subject than he is a slave to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I know after the Kodesh Baruch Hu, I'm the servant of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but everybody else is just a subject. Comes Avraham Avinu and he introduces the idea that everyone can see HaKadosh Baruch Hu not just as a melech, as a kind of impersonal regent or monarch, but everyone can be can have a personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the concept of Adam, right? That God is not just some concept, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is someone with whom we have a personal relationship and he looks after us. The truth is, if you look into the text of Adon Olam, this is really the idea that is brought out. So we had already went through the first two stanzas of Adon Olam that describe, you know, the awesomeness of God. He ruled before anything came into existence. He will continue to rule even if everything, you know, comes to an end. But then we say, going on in Adon Olam, V'hu Keili, he is my God. V'chai Goali, and he redeems me while I am still alive. And here Schwab introduces two beautiful ideas. First of all, V'chai Goali, he is my redeemer. So in Chumash we find the concept of someone being a redeemer, not just in the sense of Moshiach, but in Chumash we find the concept of a redeemer as being a kinsman, a family person. Well, let's say that you fall on hard times and you have to sell your field. So the Chumash speaks about Ba Goalo Hakaro Velo, the Goal Sinkar Ochiv, that your Goel, your redeemer, your kinsman, your cousin, can come and redeem the field that you had to sell because you lost your money. In other words, a Goel, a redeemer, is someone who's close to you, who's ready to bail you out when you get into trouble. That's the Ribono Shel Olam. He created the entire universe. He's greater than everything. He's eternal. But who can we? And he's my God. And he cares about me. He knows my name. He knows my birthday. You know, he knows everything about me. He knows my favorite color. He knows what kind of cake I like to eat, you know, and he knows everything about me. So Chai Go Ali, he's going to bail me out. The Sur Chavli Ve'es Sarah, he's the rock who takes a portion of, gets involved in me whenever I have difficulties. So Hu Nisi Umano Sli Minosko Sibi Omek Ra. And he is my, he's my portion, he's my cup. He is, you know, with me. He's at my side on the day on which I call out to him. The transition in Adon Olam is the transition from describing a God who is awesome and great and created the entire universe to describing that same God is someone with whom I have a personal relationship, and it's not a contradiction. The same God who created everything is the God who is close to me. Rav Schwab in his sefer tells the story that he heard from his Rebbe, from Rav Shlomo Breuer, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Rav Shlomo Breuer was the son-in-law to Rav Hirsch. So Rav Shlomo Breuer once met, was close to the Ksav Sofer of Shimon Sofer, and the Ksav Sofer, Rav Shimon Sofer, once asked Rav Shlomo Breuer, could you tell me over some words, a quick word from your father-in-law, Rav Shamsun Kovers? So apparently, Rav Shlomo Breuer told over the following from Rav Hirsch. He said, the whole chiddush, the whole novel idea of Adon Olam is summed up in those two words, V'hu Keli. You know, not only, I believe in God, of course I believe in God, but the chiddush, the novelty of Adon Olam is that he is my God. He's not just God, he's my God, that I have this personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that again, says Rav Schwab, that's implicit not just in the words V'hu Keli, but even in the opening words Adon Olam, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not just Melech Olam, but he is Adon Olam, he's someone with whom I have a personal relationship. Says Rav Schwab, taking this one step further, that's why when we say the Shem Hashem in davening, we do not pronounce it Yud Ke Vav Ke, but rather we pronounce it Adokai. Because what's the difference between Yud Ke Vav Ke and Adokai? So Yud Ke Vav Ke is related to the idea that Hashem is HaYehovah V'Yiyeh, that He's eternal. Right? So that's a beautiful idea. It's a very important idea. Again, like we say in the beginning of Adon Olam, V'Hu Ayav, V'Hu Hoveh, V'Hu Yeh, V'Sifara. I mean, God is eternal. We believe in that. But the notion of God's eternity is a very impersonal kind of notion. Yeah, you know, there's this God out there. It's, you know, as the Kuzari might say it, the idea that God is eternal is the God of the philosophers. It's a God, you know, who doesn't have any relationship to me. So it's the God that I believe in because logically it makes sense that there should be a creator of the universe. Okay, that's good. We certainly believe in that. But when we pronounce the Shem Hashem when we daven, we pronounce it Adokai. Adokai means my master. And the intent of Adokai is I have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the two shemos, the two names together, Yudke Vavke and Adokai, really capture, you know, the dual relationship that we have with Hashem. We recognize His awesomeness, Yudke Vavke, His eternity. He is so much bigger than all of us. But He's somebody who knows our name, Adokai. And that's the kavana, that's the thought that we're supposed to have throughout davening. It's been suggested, I saw this in the beautiful, recently published paper of my chaver, of the Aryeh Leibowitz, entitled Kana Olama. So Rabbi Leibowitz says that he had heard that is perhaps one of the reasons for which we say Adon Olam in the morning before we start davening. we know Shulchan Aruch tells us that whenever we say the Shem Hashem during davening, we're supposed to have those double kavanos, those double thoughts, that God is HaYehovah V'Yiyeh, that He is eternal, and that He's Adon HaKol, that He's the master over everything. But as we know, it's kind of hard to think about those things every time you say Adokai. Right? If you think about all the times you say Adokai during davening, you know, it's a lot to think about every time you say Adokai. I'll tell you the truth for myself, you know, not that I'm perfect with it by any stretch of the imagination, but just to make it easier, what I try to do every time I say Adokai is to think the two English words, eternal Lord. Because eternal Lord kind of sums it up. You know, eternal is how Yehovah V'Yiyeh, Lord is, you know, Adon HaKol. So if every time you say Adokai, Baruch HaKol Adokai, if you think Adokai translates eternal Lord, so, you know, that's a somewhat manageable, emphasis on somewhat, it's a somewhat manageable way to try to have Kavanah during davening, you know, for the Shem Hashem. Right, so we may not know how to pronounce the other name, but at least in terms of what the other name means, you know, it's HaYehovah V'Yiyeh. Right. But in other words, you know, why is it that we don't say it? You know, in part, it may be because we want to emphasize the personal relationship which we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So some suggest, again, Rabbi Lubowitz mentions in his Sefer, that some suggest that the function of Adon Olam is basically to do the following. It's to say as follows. Hashem, I'm about to start davening. You know, and I know, that I'm not always going to have the right kavana when I say your name throughout the davening. So here's a disclaimer at the beginning of davening. Let me describe what Hashem is all about. He's Adon Olam, Vehu Hayah, Vehu Hoveh, Vehu Yeh B'Sifara. Let me spell out all of these kavanos, all of these thoughts that I'm supposed to be having every time I say the Shem Hashem. And then Hashem, do me a favor, every time I actually say the Shem Hashem, and I'm thinking, you know, pistachio ice cream, so, you know, consider it as if I was thinking eternal Lord, you know, the way I'm supposed to, when I say the Shem Hashem. Adon Olam is kind of a disclaimer, as you will, at the beginning of davening. These are the kavanos that I'd like to have during the course of davening. I know that I may or may not have them during the course of my tefillah, but at least if I say at the outset, this is what I hope to be thinking, it's a little bit as if I'm actually having those kavanos, you know, during the course of my davening. So all of this is a good explanation as to why Adon Olam opens up the davening, right? It harkens back to Avraham Avinu, who called Hashem Adon. It speaks of our personal relationship with Hashem and kind of introduces us to God, if you will. You know, before we actually get to the business of davening, you know, God meet Mispalel, Mispalel meet God. You know, that's in a sense what Adon Olam is about. Okay, and again, as the Schwab beautifully describes it, it helps us concentrate on the personal relationship. It perhaps lays the groundwork for the kavanos we're supposed to have during the Shem Hashem throughout the entire process of davening. Okay, so why then do we sing it, or some shul sing it, at the end of davening? You know, whether it be the end of davening Shabbos morning, or the end of davening Friday night, or why is it incorporated into the Kriya Shema Al Hamito? It's one of the last things that's said. In case I messed up, right. It could be. So there's a beautiful idea that my Rebbe of Heschel Shechter quotes in the name of his Rebbe of Soloveitchik. This is printed in the first volume of the Nefesh HaRav, the beautiful sefer that describes many of the outlooks and practices of Soloveitchik. Soloveitchik pointed to a Gemara in Brachos that says that there are various things in life that require chizuk. They require strengthening. What's strengthening? Now, everything means strengthening, right? So Rashi over there explains on the Gemara that there's certain things in life that require strengthening, means that even when you think you've finished them, you have to go back and do them over again because you're never really done engaging in this activity. One such activity, says the Gemara, is Torah. Right? Even when we think we've finished Torah, you know, or the study of Torah, we're never really done. So, you know, even when we quote-unquote finish, we go back and we start it over again. Right? The best example of that, of course, is Simchas Torah, where we finish the laning of the entire Sefer Torah, and then we start Bereishis over again, right? Because there's no such thing as being done. Right? As we know, when a Masechta of Gemara is finished, the Tefillah which is decided is Hadron Allah, and the literal meaning of the word Hadron Allah is we will come back to you. Right? We're done, but we're not done. We're coming back. Right? Now we're ready to start it over again. Right? And it's traditional, whenever a Hadron is made on a Masechta or the like, you know, to read a line or two, you know, from the next Masechta that one is going to learn to underscore this very point. You know, we're never really done. You know, we're moving, we came to a pause, and now we're moving on to the next section. In fact, if you think about it, that's really the reason behind what we say when we finish one of the Chumashim and Shul. Everybody says, Chazak, Chazak, and it's Chazek. So be strong, and strengthen one another. So what does that mean? Right? So, you know, your inclination is to say, oh, Chazak, Chazak, and it's Chazek. Thank God it's over. No, but that's not what it means. That's not the translation of Chazak, Chazak. Right. And it's Chazek means we will strengthen ourselves, meaning we finished. So now we're stronger to be able to start the next Chumash. Right? And that's the idea behind Chazak, Chazak, and it's Chazak. We're going to be starting the next Chumash, the next portion. Let's strengthen ourselves for the road ahead. One of the other things the Gemara says in terms of requiring Chizuk is not only Torah, but Tefillah. Right? That Tefillah, that prayer requires Chizuk. And as Rashi explained, that's the minog of reciting Adon Olam at the end of davening, or at the end of the day. Adon Olam is really the first tefillah of the day. So by ending off the davening with Adon Olam, it's basically the equivalent of saying, we're done, but we're not really done, because we're never really done. Now let's go back, you know, to the beginning and show our readiness to start all over again. So Adon Olam is actually not a concluding tefillah. It's a starting tefillah. By reciting a starting tefillah at the conclusion, we're showing that on some level we're never really done with the davening. We're never really ready to abandon it. You know, it's always something that we're ready to come back to and repeat over again. So I happened to give this drasha recently in the shul. So somebody asked me, okay, so Rabbi, so we should say Adon Olam not just at the end of Friday night davening, we should say it at the end of Ma'ariv every single night during the week. I said, okay, so, you know, run it by the authorities and see if they go for that. I have a feeling, you know, people are usually, you know, a couple of feet out the door by the end of davening. It's enough of a chiddush that it's enough of a chiddush that they say Adon Olam at the end of davening on Shabbos. You know, you see, Adon Olam for many people is the background music for folding up the Talmud, you know, Shabbos morning. But, you know, the idea is the same idea, you know, that on Shabbos when we have a little bit of extra time, you show in a little bit more of a demonstrative sense that we're reluctant to let go of the davening. Even when we finish, we're not really done. We're looking to go back to the beginning. And if we could, we would start all over again with Adon Olam, because we're not ready to let go of the precious, precious gift that we have, which is the gift of Tefillah and the opportunity to speak to the Ribbono Shel Olam on a constant and certainly on a daily basis. But that's the Adon Olam at the end of davening is really a hearkening back to the celebration to the Adon Olam that's at the very, very beginning of davening. I thought it was a function of the shul specifically. Yeah. I mean, it's not wrong. You know, in other words, it's never bad. It's never bad to say sukkim. But if you think about it, the sukkim which are quoted are all of that coming to the shul. Varibur of chazecha, avol beisecha, right? Matovu alecha Yaakov. Why is that pasuk quoted? Because, you know, Rashi and Chazal explained that the Oholim, the tents which are referred to by Bilam HaRasha and their Pasuk, are the Bate Knesios and the Bate Midrashos, the Shuls and the Yeshivas. So Masobu Alecha Yaakov is really a statement about how wonderful it is to be in Shul. So, per se, it's really not tied to davening in general. It's really... Right. Right. Well, because in the Shiloh Siddur, it was on page 7, you know, right, when they printed chakras, the first one was Matovu. Yeah, right, okay, yeah, but it's in big print in the Shiloh Siddur. Yeah. Right. No, but Matovu really is a Shul Shiloh per se. But again, if after 120 years, the worst thing they can say is that you said Matovu every morning, you don't even come to Shul, so it's a good position to be in. Yeah. Okay, I thank you again for staying, and Be'ezus Hashem, we'll see one another next week at the regular time, back to 10:15.